You're listening to The New Paris. I'm your host, Lindsay Tremuda. Turn on the nightly news, listen to the radio, or speak with most Europeans these days, and the topic on heavy rotation is the energy crisis. This is partly an outcome of the Russia-Ukraine war, as Moscow has suspended natural gas supplies in response to economic sanctions imposed by the West. As reported by Fortune magazine recently, the invasion of Ukraine started just after European nations decided to rapidly shift to clean energy and shutter nuclear power plants, which left them vulnerable to an inflationary shock when Russia cut off gas supplies this year. European governments are trying to diversify supplies and introduce measures to reduce demand and save energy. In France, we've experienced fuel shortages and high gas prices across the country since September, and have been told by government leaders to do what we can to reduce our own energy consumption. If that means turning down the heat and wearing turtlenecks to stay warm, then so be it. And yes, that is really something a minister said. To go deeper on the crisis, how the EU is handling the situation, and what needs to happen to prevent further trouble for citizens, I am joined by Laurent Schmidt. Laurent is the head of utilities and European development for DC Bell, a renewable energy technology company. He's also spent years working for the European Transmission System Operators Association, as well as on grid innovation. As always, links to sources and articles mentioned in each episode are provided in the show notes wherever you stream your podcasts. Now, let's talk energy with Laurent. Good morning, Laurent. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Let me ask you, because as someone who is working in energy and specifically in renewable energies, what is going on in Europe right now? What caused what we know to be an energy crisis?
Yeah, so I think it's important to restart from a world energy system point of view at the pan-European scale. So most of our energy system are interconnected, whether it's gas or electricity. And so we need to look at the European energy balance from a world perspective. There are really two phenomena which are creating this crisis. The most known one is the Russian invasion into Ukraine and all the sanctions which have been taken by Europe to stop basically purchasing gas from Russia. Which raises, I would say, supply issues into Europe, because some countries in Europe were largely dependent on gas from Russia, particularly Germany. And basically, it is a too short time for this winter to really develop alternate sources of supply. There are some which get developed. So basically increasing imports, LNG import from the US, increasing import from Norway, and so on. But it is really not enough depending on the energy demand. So here, the issue is the supply and demand balance at a European scale. So one of the key questions is what is going to be the demand of energy of Europe for this winter? And that is really depending on several factors, in particular the weather severity, how cold is going to be our winter. They are basically the coldest it is and the more energy we will need to heat our industry, houses and buildings. And of course, it is... right now, an exercise of predicting our risks related to this weather. And of course, if we have a weather which is rather hot during this winter, we may not have too much of a crisis. If temperatures are going very low, then we will suffer supply issue on the gas side. Mm-hmm. But people don't know that there is a second, often don't know that there is a second difficulty right now, which is the nuclear situation in France, which is related to the low availability of nuclear power plants, which is below 50% for the moment.
And that is because of what?
And this is largely because of basically... I would say technical issues found onto some of the nuclear piping, and so the need to reinforce some of this piping with welding, and this was imposed by the nuclear authority onto EDF, plus the fact that the COVID has actually really constrained and complexified the maintenance program of all these nuclear power plants. So as without going too much to the technical detail, we also have a supply risk in France on electricity because of this low nuclear availability.
And we've heard the government say things like, you know, we may have power outages, they're going to try to minimize them, or they will impose them in companies where they're, you know, doing heavy, where there's heavy machinery and, heavy energy or dense production facilities. And we also know that France has sent a lot of gas to Germany. So regarding those two issues, you know, there are things that are very specific to France. And there's this idea of European solidarity among these pressures. So what is the ultimate risk for France? I mean, is it more sort of the, I mean, because historically winters are getting warmer and warmer. You and I are based in Paris, which is perhaps a bit of a skewed perspective, because right now it is October and it is spring-like weather. So, you know, but that could shift. But other parts of France obviously get a lot colder, or could get a lot colder. So what is sort of the ultimate risk for France specifically? Is it the nuclear issue?
So basically, yes, the nuclear issue is one of the difficulty, because we need nuclear, particularly during cold winter periods, because this is the period where the maximum of reactor are operating. So normally we run around 80 to 90% of our nuke portfolio during this time, during cold conditions. So the key question is what's going to happen if this nuclear is not available. We've seen recently also some strikes happening into EDF nuclear, which may delay further this maintenance. So what may happen if the nuke is not available is the electrical grid is interconnected. So what's going to happen is the foreign countries, being UK or Germany or Northern Europe, will come as a solidarity and will supply electricity to France as a first measure. But the difficulty is this electricity is going to be largely produced out of gas generation, particularly at the peak time. And so we may end up into a scenario where the gas difficulty of Germany during these peak periods may actually curtail some of the load into the gas sector, and particularly the industry, while in the same time we have constraint on the electrical sector in France. So here the key question is whether solidarity will be kept during these peaks across Europe, and whether basically there will be sufficient gas in Germany to produce electricity and ship it back to France during this cold condition. Mm-hmm. If not, basically what's going to happen is the electrical system is a system which is governed by physical laws and not by laws voted in parliament. And so what happens very simply is if you don't balance supply and demand in real time, you would see the grid to collapse. And of course, that no one wants this to happen, because it would be a major disaster for our society. So what's going before this to happen, grid operator have started to take measures which are known as load shedding strategy. And this is what we are currently discussing right now, and where we hear RTE informing basically consumers that in case of extreme cold situation, we may see a shortage of power into certain industries and houses during the peak time in the day. So if everything goes well, that would be maximum for 2 hours, in the morning peak or in the evening peak. So if grid operator do that work well, it will not end up into a complete blackout. If it ends up in a complete blackout, that would be a disaster, because this would take time to restart the system.
So, you know, one of the things the government has been saying is, well, we just need to have, we can't crank up the heat this year. We have to wear turtlenecks and make sure you're turning out the lights. I mean, this kind of commentary, is this even useful to get consumers to understand the scale of what's happening?
Yeah, that's I share your skepticism about this kind of messaging. I think we are a bit having too many wishful thinking in France about people going to do a major in-kind effort. I would call it just in-kind effort in case of such situation. And of course, it is important to have people aware of the importance to be efficient in this period. So, for instance, if you have an EV like me, not to charge during this extreme peak is relatively easy because you are an EV as storage. But I don't think personally that it will be enough if the winter really gets cold. And I think it is also not sending a clear enough message to people to prepare about blackout in their home for several hours during these winter periods. What I also am frustrated about the fact that in the majority of countries outside France, grid operator prepare basically demand response schemes, which are actually going beyond wishful thinking, which is really incentivizing a certain consumer for reacting to an extreme event, being a cold spell, and where there would be a reward given to this consumer for their demand response, similarly to what happens already into the industrial sector. So I think we also fail in France for the moment into establishing these safeguards, and we surely bet onto a warm winter and about efficient, I would say, minor energy efficiency measures, which I have my doubt will go further than 5 to 10% impact onto the peak.
Yeah, actually, you bring up those percentages. A recent news report said that so far with the measures, I think mostly corporate and governmental, of lowering their own energy consumption, there's been 14% less consumption in gas and 5% less in electricity, but that's mostly corporations. And then you have this symbolic dimming of the Eiffel Tower, which, yeah, you're shaking your head, which no one can see, but I can see. I mean, is that lip service? I don't even believe it's the most draining source of energy in the first place, you know, and is that good that we should be showing, you know, Russia, you know, you've managed to have us dim our cultural beacon. You know, is that just optics?
Yeah, it is a bit of cosmetics, I must say. Of course, if you aggregate this to a scale of the entire France, it has some impact. But if I scale it down to an individual houses, and if you start to impact your lights, which are largely based on LED light bulbs, you're going to impact less than 5% of your power. And you may also actually impact the lifestyle of consumer a lot, because if you ask them to be in the dark during 2 hours in the morning, in the evening, it is actually very impactful for a very, very low impact, while there may be other smarter measures. So what also I would like to challenge is the fairness of these measures. On one side, the grid operator ends up paying very high amounts to large industries, and that's why they actually are looking at this seriously, while they are only counting on to wishful thinking measures and in-kind measures from consumer, which, again, I think this is important, but I wonder whether it's going to be sustainable if we have a cold spell over several days or weeks, and if people will be happy to shut down their light every morning and evening over a period of 2-3 weeks during the winter. It's going to be some fun for a few days, but I am pretty sure that people will get some fatigue into doing this after a few days, especially if it gets cold into the house. So, I really think we could do much better into this environment.
I saw a recent graph. I think it was in one of the major newspapers showing where the heat and energy consumption, how it falls in Paris, and it is very heavy in Western Paris, where there's obviously bigger apartments, historically wealthier residents. You know, do you feel like maybe the risk is also that the working class is going to be the most heavily burdened by this because they're the ones who are already looking at their monthly budgets and, you know.
Okay, so it's again a fairness question. What's going to be the rules for managing these rotating load sheddings? These are very secret rules hidden to everyone and managed by the grid operator, who is actually controlled by the states. And I suppose they are going to first shed loads which are far away from Palais de l'Élysée, and they'll end up into they'll try to shed less and less critical load, a more and more critical load while the burden gets higher on too. So again, I'm not criticizing. At some stage, if the situation gets very tense, we need to do that. But what I'm arguing is the best way to shed load is actually to encourage people to save out of demand response pricing schemes, which reward people for doing a certain effort. And the best way to encourage people to do it is according to this scheme, and people are smart, so they will be able to define whether they have PV with storage or other flexible loads. They will be willing to help the system, while others and maybe poor people have very limited loads, but their lights and their electricity heating is extremely crucial for them because their house is poorly insulated. And I guarantee you, after 30 minutes of blackout, they are going to feel the cold temperature. So
these incentives, is it mostly tax breaks?
No, they are actually, we call them demand response incentives. So basically what it consists of is you try to predict what's the average behavior of a consumer, and basically you measure the behavior of the consumer during an extreme peak, which is basically measured through the EcoWatt app. Mm-hmm. And basically you just reward for the effort, which is the difference between the average behavior and the effort done by the consumer. And you actually give a true incentive. So that means you drive people potentially to buy a battery or to really rethink how they're going to consume. So for instance, in my home, I just bought a small battery to make sure that my gas heating can run during the electricity outage. So these are very, very basic things, which I think no one talks about. And this is really a pity.
Before we get into, you know, the work that needs to be done in renewables, I wanted to just mention that we, you know, I'm sure foreign listeners might have heard about the fuel shortages that we had in France in recent weeks, and there were striking refinery workers demanding higher salaries. And this is partly because there are these oil and gas companies making major profits from, you know, surging energy prices. So what is happening there, and will we keep seeing these sort of spikes in gas unavailability, or was that strictly related to the strikes and not the broader issue?
Yeah, I think this is a broader economical issue, and generally speaking, what we see is some activities in France are very concentrated to a point that basically a limited number of workers have a very strong power to block the economy in France, and the refinery worker are a good example. I'm not judging whether they are right or wrong to ask for this salary increase. I'm not able to judge. What I see is they are definitely better paid than an average worker in France, and I would say it is the same for operator of nuclear assets. It is the same for operator of grids and so on. And I think what we will see in the future is the need to go into a better resilience, more resilient system, in the way that future systems are going to be more dispersed, is going to be more distributed in a way that consumers are going to be able to self-sustain in case of a major incident into large infrastructure. I think this is the way we need to think in the future, and that's going to make us resilient, of course, to difficult strikes periods, but also to a war situation. When we look at Mr. Putin's attack into Ukraine, is focused right now are precisely on two large concentrated energy infrastructure, being nuke assets, hydropower plants, and grids. And I think we need, as a society, to rethink how the resiliency of our society is organized.
Well, in like many areas of life, people get very comfortable and don't actually want to shift the way we consume, the way we do things. And so it's sort of these like minor changes or improvements, but they're, you know, the question is, like you say, will it be sufficient? And that leads me to obviously the renewable discussion, because that's the business that you work in. What is happening in terms of getting Europe ready for renewables, and what do those renewables look like actually? What form do they take?
Okay, so Europe has always been at the forefront of developing renewable, and I consider our European system as basically a benchmark for other continents when it comes to renewable integration. And the European Commission has done excellent work into defining a trajectory before the crisis, which was defined as part of the clean energy package and repower EU policies after the COVID situation. And at that time already, renewable was at the front of the strategy, simply because renewable becomes today the cheapest way of producing electricity into our pan-European system, even cheaper than nuke today. What has happened is basically because of this invasion and this extreme situation on gas, as what I was reporting before, it has been a further accelerator to that situation. And this Repower EU plan has now added layers of mandates to accelerate renewable development, simply because every kilowatt or kilowatt hour of renewable which you bring online in the system, particularly during the peak, is going to be a saving on gas molecule consumption, I would say 30 or 40% of which could would come normally through Russia. So the more we invest and accelerate into renewable, and the more we become independent, and so I think this has really become a strong target. What is going to be the renewable? It's going to be largely wind, and particularly offshore wind on one side, because it is there are very good resources in Northern Europe in particular, and it's going to be rooftop PV. There is really a rush onto a rooftop PV with an entire rethinking of a performance regulation for buildings, where the direction is to mandate installation of PV on every building. And very important is to encourage self-consumption of PV by the building. And that goes back to my previous comment, that the more self-consumption you have, the less dependent you are on the, from the grid, and the better you are in case of an extreme weather event I was just referring before. So that goes into domains such as adding storage with PV, adding bidirectional charging of EV with PV, and really accelerating. And there is really a great potential. We are talking about potentially around 40 million houses, 40 billion houses, which are to be equipped in the coming 10, 15 years in Europe with that kind of installation.
So how does this get decided then? Does France have the ability to make mandates specific to France, or does this need to be decided on a European level?
So this is a complex discussion happening between the European level and the countries. So that's in the Brussels terminology, we call it a trilogue. And that's where basically Brussels gives the direction and the states have to decide what is their way of implementing it, depending on the resources which are available. And obviously, every state has a different strategy. Between Germany and France, we see the difference between gas versus nuke, which has been an historical difference. But what the Commission is trying to do is really to provide an incentive for renewable in particular into installing and deploying renewable wherever possible and as quickly as possible. And that's where the difficulty is, because the grid, again, is starting to be congested, is starting to be a constraint. So we have to be smart in the way we integrate this renewable in the future.
And how would you say France, in particular, or even on a more specific level, Paris, how are these energy sources, these renewable sources, getting implemented, or are they getting implemented at all yet?
Yeah, so they are existing renewable implemented definitely. So if we are looking, for instance, the case of rooftop PV on homes, I think overall we have around 10% of homes which are already equipped with solar PV on the roof, and so that really goes as a natural development of the ecosystem. What is really new is that there is a time for in terms of speed and quantity to be installed, given the new mandate given by the Commission. So it is now really a rush. And this rush is going to be complex because the grid and the energy system is able to absorb and integrate a certain level of renewable. But the more we put into the grid and the more difficult it is to stabilize the grid. So that means we need to be smarter in the way to operate the grid and in the way to organize interaction between renewable and grids. As an example, I will just take the very simple example of a PV system on the roof in a home with storage. Today, the storage is not capable of supplying the home in case of a grid fault. So that means if we have a blackout, the home will stay with this PV and storage, but not operating, as an example. So it's going to be strange. Solar will be there, storage will be there, but the home is not going to be powered.
And when you say storage, what are we referring to?
So we are referring to a battery,
Okay.
Basically simply put in the home to stabilize and make sure that the solar is exported at the time when the energy system really require this. So
Okay.
that's just a very simple example to show the kind of change. Moving forward, what's going to be very interesting and it's going to be a game changer is the electrical vehicle. The electrical vehicle will come in every home as storage on wheels. So if you combine well the photovoltaics with your electrical vehicle, you're going to be self-isolated through your PV and EV during few hours. You can
Huh.
use the power which you have in your EV to supply the grid. As a matter of fact, I'm right now doing an installation in my home, which I think I will be able, in case of a blackout from RTE, to stay independent for 2 or 3 days, just using the electricity from the battery in my car.
Wow.
And so that electricity, you know, that's the beauty of the physics of electricity, provided you put the right regulation in place and you let basically consumer to develop, I would say, innovative mindset towards this future. So the future is not about nuke everywhere. The future is about combining nuke with renewable and being smart in organizing that integration at the consumer level.
So the company that you work for, which focuses on one aspect of renewables, is that right? Are you consumer facing, or do you put pressure on government, and influence maybe their thinking on these issues?
So we are multi-sided. We are two-sided. The first side is the consumer. So we are consumer-centric, and so we offer something which we think will be revolutionary in the energy sector, a bit like the iPhone 10 years ago in the telecom sector. And that's going to be what we called a home energy station. So that's going to be a power station in the home. And that's going to combine charging of the car, discharging, electrical, basically feeding from the PV of your rooftop, and then also your storage. The other side of the story, which we are developing, is making sure that this device has a smart interface with the grid and being able to participate in demand response program, being able to respond to price signal, and being able to curtail in a smart way, smarter than a load shedding, when something happened into the power system. And I think this is really the future. I think the future is about engaging consumer, making them, I would say, in a way, self-sufficient during these extreme periods. Again, we are not talking about replacing the entire grid and so on. We are talking about supporting the grid during these extreme periods. And I think what we see today is the grid on its own is not capable anymore to support and guarantee the power supply during these extreme periods.
So if we were to leave listeners with sort of best practices, even if they can't, let's say they can't afford a battery that's big enough or strong enough to support their home in the case of a blackout. What are some of the little things people can do in their homes, the changes they can implement that will actually hopefully make a difference?
Okay, so very good question. So first of all, think about what would I do if I have a 2 hours shortage of power in the morning for 7 to 9, or in the evening for 7 to 9. So these are the two critical periods. And so here, what you just need to think is, what are the electrical equipments which I'm able to unplug to be able to support the system? So that's the minimum. But also, if I have a blackout in my home, which is likely to happen if there are cold situations, how am I going to sustain during these 2 hours? So here the question is, I will not be able to use electrical equipment in my kitchen. I will not be able to use electricity from my heating devices, so air heating, heat pump, and so on. And if I have a gas heating equipment, I will probably have gas, because it's very unlikely the gas and electricity will have shortage in the same time. I won't be able to actually heat with gas, because my electrical boiler, my gas boiler is actually also using electricity. And so here, what, as an example, I've done in my personal case, I've just bought a kind of small battery, which is able to supply me with my internet box, with my boiler, gas boiler, which makes that, and with one or two lights, which make that I can stay during a few days with 2 hours outage of power, still continuing to do some work and do some minimal heating in my house. Okay, so these are the typical example which people need to think. Of course, you need to know a bit about electricity, but how am I going to behave in case of regular 2 hours shutdown of electricity in my house for several days? That's really one of the critical elements. If people have an electrical car, of course, one of the questions will be, make sure that your electrical car is charged during the night and you do not try to charge during this period. So these are very, very simple questions.
And in theory, having food, shelf stable food available, that doesn't necessarily need to be cooked. I mean, that could be another issue.
So the freezer, I think, can last more than, if we don't open it, can go over 6 hours. So I don't think there will be issue here. I think you will be still able to drag food from your fridge, and probably is going to cool a bit. But again, it's not a big issue. The problem is you won't be able to heat it. And so, for example, as what I did myself, but it's just an example, I just bought a plancha, a gas plancha, which I put outside, which is totally independent from my system, which I can cook basically food in the evening out of gas without electricity from my kitchen. So this, again, we could heat sandwiches, we could do several things, cold food, and so on. But I think what I worry about is if it continues over several days, and it happens when I was young. I lived in Quebec during 2 years, and I happened to witness a shortage of electricity in my apartment for 2 weeks.
Oh my
And
gosh.
this is really shocking in how cold it becomes into the apartment, how much you depend on the food and the heating of the food. And it was the bad news is that if it happens, it's also very cold outside. So you don't enjoy going out. You don't. So you need actually your home as kind of as kind of an environment, because you feel protected still into this environment. So if you have wood, you better start your wooden wood place and fireplace and so on. So these are the very simple. So I think people need to think, okay, during these 2 hours, what I can do this winter, and then on midterm, I really rethink whether they can still rely and trust this big infrastructure. And I would really encourage them to think if they have good roof to put PV, if they have an electrical vehicle to rethink the way they use their electrical vehicle or storage and so on. That's the midterm direction which I see happening. By the way, the installation of PV in France, I think, have more than tripled in less than 6 months as a result of COVID, as well as this fear about the energy crisis.
Well, let's hope people are listening and paying attention, and wherever they're getting their information, they realize the long-term effects of issues like this and how the geopolitical influences our day-to-day life. Laurent Schmidt, thank you so much for joining and walking us through this.
Thank you. I hope nothing will happen. That's what I've been very negative in some of my statements, but again, in order to best prepare, it's better to think about the worst
case scenario
and not prepare for the best. And my fear is, for the moment in France, we mostly prepare for the best.
Yes, I agree.
That's the show for today. As always, thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing with friends. You can find all previous episodes of the New Paris podcast wherever you stream your podcasts and on World Radio Paris. If you're enjoying these conversations, please consider picking up a copy of the New Paris book or my recent release, The New Parisienne, from your local booksellers. Until next time, à bientôt.